Alright, it's a good afternoon to you and welcome to On the Radar. Of course, today we are having three staff to talk about, two of them. We are going to hear from the, you know, annual report of the Namibia Agronomic Board. Of course, Dwight Links is going to fill us in. And we're also going to discuss in terms of the, you know, the growth, the economic growth, the first quarter. I mean, the Namibian economic growth has grown to 1.8% compared to 3 and 4% last year of the same time according to the Namibia Statistics Agency, and we are going to have an economist, and at the same time we are also going to look at the what Africa is doing when it comes to, you know, the development as far as artificial intelligence is concerned. How is it becoming transformative, the transformative power of artificial intelligence in Africa? That's what we are going to be looking at. That is, of course, coming the report from the, you know, this is the report on MasterCard Africa, MasterCard Artificial Intelligence of in Africa. That's the 2025 report. We are going to look at that. So, yeah, it's a Friday. We are taking it a little bit, you know, light. No international news today, but we're just going to have some in depth, in depth discussion, and without wasting time, we are going to see if we can get Dwight Links on board. Let's see if he can fill us in as to what is going on, and then we'll see how to continue from there. So you can just stick around. Don't change the dial. So just stick around and we'll see how we get there. So we are also going to call an economist who is going to help us understand what this growth means. In fact, when I'm listening to it with my little knowledge of economics, I would say that the Namibian economy did not do well in this 2025. Maybe there is something else that we need to understand. Maybe it is doing well or it did not do well. We need to understand that part. But we need an economist to help us understand that. Otherwise, we'll just be speculating here. But don't forget also that there was a United Nations General Assembly. The United Nations General Assembly of this year has seen the President Trump. You know, criticize the U and the United States, the United Nations, and in fact, calling the green hydrogen, I mean the green, this climate change issue as a hoax, that it is not as true as the United Nations, you know, presents it or wants to push it, like say it's a fake, it's a scam. In other words, we'll say, you know, Trump has always wanted to, and in fact, he's always threatened to quit being a member of the United Nations. And we're also seeing a shift in, you know, the recognition of Palestine as a state. by most European, you know, countries. So it's a world changing very, very rapidly. World is changing very rapidly, and yeah, it's no surprise. It's no surprise. And it seems that we'll have to start with our last one while our colleagues get ready. And we'll get there. And we'll just have to start with the last one, just to see how. And I mean, this is news analytics, and we have to analyze some developmental issues, especially that are taking place in Africa, and that are very much transformative in a positive way that is driving, you know, and shaping our economic status and participating in the industrial revolution as a whole. So that's what we can discuss right now while we see how to get the rest of the people on board.
Save big at USAVE. 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions just $189.99, 4 packets Knorr thickening soup all variants $24, 700 milliliters crystal gold tomato sauce $24.99, 750 grams Nola mayonnaise a baggin at just $27.99, 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread $14.99, and 3 kilo bag selected pasta polana $74.99. You save as good as the best for less.
So we continue, and I was saying that while our colleagues are busy or are preparing themselves, we will just continue with our last, you know, presentation, that is to do with how much transformative has artificial intelligence become in Africa. And according to this report, they're even saying that Africa is not even a passive participant. So, Africa is a, if you are not passive, what is? Okay, so I forgot the opposite of you know, passivity, but Africa is an active, yes. So it's a proactive participant. Africa is a proactive participant in the use of artificial intelligence, with countries like Kenya, Morocco, South Africa, Nigeria leading in, you know, artificial intelligence, especially from the innovative part. When it comes to innovation, you know, Nigeria, South Africa, and Kenya are leading. And we are going to hear more on this report. And of course, because it's something that I've been, you know, reading about, and we've been discussing about artificial intelligence for the past 6 years on this Eagle FM. So it's not something that is new, of course, but there's a new angle to it that now it has become part of what is fueling economic growth in Africa. So, and artificial intelligence is being developed and deployed across various sectors to address challenges in the healthcare, food security, and financial inclusion. The financial inclusion and the economic development. So this is achieved by providing tools for data analysis. It is achieved by providing tools for data analysis, protection, automation, and helping to optimize the resources, the resource allocation, and improve decision making, particularly for underserved communities. Now, one of the key sectors is agriculture. One of the key aspects in this is agriculture. Right. So we'll have to pause while we are talking about agriculture. We have to pause, and I got an indication now that my colleague Dwight is ready to fill us in on what is going on. So from there, we can just tie whatever we are talking about on the agricultural side of things together with the report on. All right. So like I said, we are in touch with my colleagues, with my colleague Dwight, who is on the ground. Dwight, good afternoon.
Afternoon, friends, and afternoon to the listeners.
Yes. So I understand you are at the NAB annual report.
Well, yes, Franz, it was actually an announcement of not just the unveiling of the annual report, which obviously in itself just speaks of a historical context in terms of works and developments and programs that the Namibia Agronomic Board had completed for 2023 and 2024.
Yeah.
It also incorporated the unveiling of strategic plans, specifically two of them, meant for the next, if we're now looking forward, up until 2030.
Okay. All right. So just take us through the details of what is really being said, and then, you know, whether or not it is impactful to, it is impactful to, you know, the Namibian lives as far as the agriculture sector is concerned.
100%, Franz. So specifically taking a look, Franz, at the onset of the developments that obviously took place specifically was that at this particular event, this was a scenario in terms of firstly giving a historical historical context in terms of what has been seen happening in terms of developments and trends in the Namibian agricultural sector. So this obviously means on a broad-based analysis, except for the livestock. Obviously, any particular livestock products and that come out of the agricultural sector were not part of this particular discussion because that falls under the mandate of the Meat Board of Namibia. Now, and that's also for Namibians to know that there's technically two particular, if we can call it regulatory representatives in the Namibian agricultural sector. Meat Board is for everything to do with animal husbandry, and the Namibia Agronomic Board is to do with anything that you've got to grow or technically any particular crop cultivation that has to take place. What came out, Franz, specifically as being some of the particular key points that we've, in many cases on Eagle FM, have focused on, specifically, once again, it has been the particular fact has been confirmed once again by the chief executive of the Agronomic Board, that being Mr. Fidelis Mwazi, who cited specifically that agriculture, that the potato is Namibia's most consumed and imported crop. Namibia specifically produces at least a particular small percentage of the crop itself, where we actually, in terms of the volumes that are consumed, greatly outweigh the particular volumes that are on offer. This is insightful specifically because you can see that Namibia at least has a local production value of 34% valued at 84 million Namibian dollars or at least 8,200 tons. And that's what has been seen specifically in the year of 2024. So that particular period, obviously, that was being measured in the unveiling of the of the annual report. Another particular scenario ultimately has been, where does the rest of what we consume on this very pivotal and very crucial crop in Namibia's particular dietary landscape, where does most of it come from? Most of it is being imported from South Africa, which stands at a whopping 66%, which translates to 21,000 tons or 162 million Namibian dollars in value. Now, you're going to ask me the next question, France, will probably be, you know, what about the particular developments that have taken place locally? And that was the 34% that I touched on. Mm. However, there have been other particular initiatives to try and scale this up, because the chief executive, the board of the board chairperson of the Namibia Agronomic Board, as well as also the managing director for the crop value chain development strategy, that being Mr. Gilbert Mulonda, all three of them technically confirmed at the same particular point and the same particular part that both communal farmers and commercial farmers actually have to play a bigger role specifically in achieving Namibia's desired goals encapsulated in NDP6. Reason being, France, is that we all heard of the success story at the start of this year in terms of the wonderful potato harvest that came through, that we also carried on the Villager e-paper platform, as well as also covered on the radio programs and the specific programming. But even then, those are but small positive steps taking place, because the desired outcome is to literally at least convert that 34% consumption of a potato, a single crop, to being at least being 80%, a value that should be 80% by 2030. So still small positives taking place, still small developments taking place, still small particular, you know, wins being recorded here and there. However, we import, just as we also have a great dependence on importing bananas, apples, and other particular citrus products, because South Africa, it recently came out, is also known as being one of the world's largest citrus producers. And citrus products or citrus crops are specifically your oranges, your lemons, your what we call a narki here in Afrikaans, specifically
the tangerines. In English, we call them tangerines.
It's technically a tangerine, you're right.
And then, well, of also, course, grapefruits.
Yeah, and peaches. Mm. Peaches and apricots also form part of that particular cluster of citrus products. So those products are, you know, they are seen as a diversification of the same sector, the crop cultivation sector. Obviously, it just depends on what are the plans taking place on the ground. Those particular plans have been identified, France, that potato, you would not believe me, France, if I told you that potato has its own value chain development scheme or project planned for 2025-2030. This is one of the unveiling initiatives that were unveiled today. The second one is ultimately also understanding the particular integrated strategic business plan, also for the same period, 2025-2030, which obviously is geared towards, you know, having this this complete, if you can call it like a repositioning strategy, like in basic business administration or in marketing strategy, you are re-strategizing a sector to achieve a specific goal. And it is primarily outlined to guide, to be a guiding framework, to provide a clear direction the word they use from the Agronomic Board is share, the word stakeholder there, as well as also the particular sector of agriculture, and in terms of what role it has to play. So when we look at these particular things, France, these are some of the particular unveilings that took place, specifically at the event earlier this morning, and it had a focal part to play specifically that it's not just about the annual report unveiling, but primarily just to say, hey, listen, you know, these are these other particular strategic initiatives that will also be announced in the same scenario.
Because there was a time when they said that potatoes, they were about to cross the borders because there was a month where we had enough potatoes locally. But then it didn't last long, because it seems that we don't have a reliable, local production of potato. Maybe we have a reliable, but it seems we don't have a consistent, we don't have consistency in terms of the capacity of production.
100%, Franz. Reason being, Franz, is that speaking at the same event, obviously the minister was also there, Inga Zamwani, and she cited specifically that Namibia has no other choice but primarily to work in tandem with its SADC members. Primarily, you would know who I'm currently pointing at. That would specifically be the South Africans, because the South Africans have also in the past year and a half actually become annoyed with our particular, which we call it as a temporary border closure strategy for various kinds of crops. It has annoyed the South Africans that they are now also implementing the same particular strategy for certain Namibian products that only Namibia is producing in excess of, meaning we sell our surpluses to South Africa. So, and the minister herself cited, you know what, Namibia cannot have a choice in terms of neighbors, but Namibia does have a choice in terms of its partners, and that it does force Namibia to technically work a lot more cooperatively with its economic partners, and that in many cases is South Africa when you look at the food and agriculture sector. Now, this technically means, obviously, from that particular statement, France, that I just summarized there for you, coming from the minister herself, was that specifically Namibia is obviously in its international realm. We obviously tie business, or if we can call it economic aspirations and goals, we tie it in with bilateral relations, meaning we cannot just have relations, good relations with someone or be friendly with someone for the sake of just being friendly. It states it in our international relations. It states it like that, as well as also when you come to the SADC level, which also is another dimension of our international relations policy. It cites that Namibia works actively with its neighbors to achieve the desired total economic integration of the bloc, as what SADC has laid it out, because SADC also wishes to achieve its integrated economic bloc status. So this translates also to a scenario that Namibia and South Africa actually have to iron out these issues which we have with each other regarding, you know, the importation of certain kinds of agricultural products, the closure of borders, you know, to allow local producers on both sides of the border to actually enjoy, you know, complete market access in terms of what they have available, as well as also the agro-processing developments that Namibia wishes to pursue, that South Africa obviously has a history and a very strong presence in, and thus also has the potential to export to Namibia those products from their strong position of the agro-processing sector. So this, she just literally reiterated that Namibia and South Africa in future, starting from this year, have to work a lot closer with each other around the crop sector under the agricultural sectoral analysis. Another dimension, Franz, is also, and I forgot to mention this, is that one of the other particular unveilings that took place, I'm not going to focus on the annual report because, Franz, that technically speaks about historic developments, which is, you know, just a looking glass, looking at where you traveled from, what the trends were, what the analyses were. We obviously also have to look at what plans, we have to focus on what plans specifically the NAB is focusing going ahead. Now, I mentioned the integrated business plan, which is something pretty internal for them, the potato value, crop value chain development strategy. And then there is the overall crop value chain development strategy that they also unveiled. And this, all three of them, remember, are factoring or concentrating on the next 5 years, 2025 to 2030. Technically, it would be a 6-year period, but it's the next 6-year period for this particular roadmap. In the crop value chain development strategy scenario, France, the important thing outlined here specifically is that they wish to take, to look at the sector in terms of achieving inclusive growth, food security and climate resilience at the same time. And just to add on to that is a scenario of that it has to offer a comprehensive framework to unlock the full potential of Namibia's crop industry. Remember, I'm emphasizing crop and not saying overall agricultural sector, because that statement would include livestock as well. And this ultimately has to resonate, France, with the aims that NDP6 wishes to guide by. So you can now see the sort of like, if I can call it like the on the ground, movements, almost like a chessboard movement, but movements regarding coming through from SOEs and agencies of the government that now have to try and put the strategies in place that speak towards the overall ambition and mission from NDP6 in terms of what it wants to achieve, how it wishes to get there, and specifically what are the key benefits or the strong points that have to be leveraged upon. Because remember, even though we might say that 34% of Namibia currently produces 34% of its overall potato demand, it produces that locally, that 34%, there is still a potential strategy, an avenue, a potential access point for that to grow by year, every year, to increase yield, to increase production, as thus also to include other particular, you know, other particular industry players to try and assist and try and help make or actually expand that particular strategy to be a lot more robust. So this is still early days, Franz. The particular Namibia Agronomic Board event specifically was not just focused on the annual report, because specifically that would have been just one dimensional, but actually incorporated the developments or the unveilings of the development strategies for crop value chain and for potato value chain, and then ultimately their particular integrated business strategy that they outlined.
Yeah, but it seems that the minister, without, you know, talking loud, without revealing it loud, she seems to suggest that there is some kind of cohesion, cohesive pressure from South Africa, because of what Namibia has done in the past for closing the border, a kind of an economic tit for tat, if you like, to show Namibia that they don't cross that line. So where does, I mean, if somebody has to understand this, it means that then Namibia next time, should they have a surplus production of potato locally, they will be forced to still continue importing potatoes and then suppressing the advantage that other local farmers should have had, as far as the sale is concerned.
Franz, in terms of that analysis that you cited right there, you are correct in terms of the analogy that you pointed out there, in terms of seeing, you know, that this could potentially lead to an economic tit for tat. We have to sort of like remember that back in 2024 last year, just before the former Minister of Agriculture himself, Shkali Schletwein, completed his term up until obviously into this new year, he had to react specifically when the new South African agricultural minister, who is the party leader of the Democratic Alliance in South Africa, John Steenhuisen, when John Steenhuisen stepped into that role and he heard Namibia specifically, you know, enact this particular policy itself, Steenhuisen was surprised. Mind you, France, before Steenhuisen stepped in, or before the DA actually got involved in national agenda setting in South Africa, they did not know of the particular relationship that Namibia and an ANC-dominated government set up in South Africa actually had in terms of, you know, the economic cohesion and the economic... Okay, you obviously pointed towards coercion, but the cohesiveness that I'm pointing towards was that literally Schletwein said in a statement that the predecessors before Steenhuisen all knew about this particular temporary border closure for specific kinds of agricultural produce coming from the South African market, so that Namibian local producers have the opportunity of producing and selling and thus reaping rewards from their own particular investments in the local Namibian market. Now, this technically meant that Steenhuisen probably needed like a sensitization exercise or a refresher, or, you know, like specifically just being told, hey, listen, Minister from South Africa, you need to understand that this has been a long-standing particular agreement, which is not something, which even Schletwein confirmed, is not a written particular rule, but it technically is a specific soft kind of agreement between Namibia and South Africa to allow Namibia's infant industries, which they technically are, and specifically in the crop cultivation side of things, which is infant vis-a-vis or in comparison to the red meat production industry of agriculture, which we are a pretty strong producer of, because South Africa is banned from exporting even to China and even to any other country because of the rampant foot and mouth outbreaks that they've been experiencing year after year. Namibia can successfully deal with foot and mouth outbreaks. We've explored the subject matter before, Franz, and you also cited specifically Namibia has certain controls in place. South Africa has to prove that they've got their controls in place around their red meat production. But South Africa's very strong suit is literally their crop cultivation means. They call crop cultivation and processing ability, their crop cultivation and agro-processing industries, as well as also then the advanced food industries that pop up and can build from that platform. And Namibia is very weak in that particular scenario. So you can read into Minister Zamwani's particular, you know, her assessment at today's event, that specifically it is an ongoing exercise between Namibia and South Africa to technically just to be once again on the same understanding level of like-minded thinking and understanding, because historically Namibia and South Africa, when it come after our independence and after their full independence of 1994, we've had the best of relationships that we've probably been way better than Canada and America and Mexico together. We've had the best of relations. So there's technically not been many low points since 1994 between Namibia and South Africa in that scenario.
Yeah, and I also don't see the low point now. I think I see more of kind of like competitive cohesiveness, if I have to put it that way, if that's the correct way, where South Africa seems to have had an upper hand and they don't want to really lose it because they are protecting their local farmers, but at the same time at the expense of the local farmers in Namibia. So, and Namibia will be forced to be cooperative to protect instead the relationship that you are talking about, the cordial relationship that has been enjoyed for more than 20 years, which is now going to, you know, have an intensive negative impact to the local farmers, if you like, because now they will be left, you know, to stand for themselves.
Just to add on to that, Franz, there was another particular dimension that the minister just after that Namibia South Africa explainer or insight that she provided in her address at the Economic Board platform. She also mentioned at the same time, while that particular, you know, once again trying to find common ground between Namibia and South Africa, Namibia, you have to factor in also, Franz, this is another dimension of competitiveness or competition, that Namibia obviously now wishes to access into the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement, which also means that other African countries can also ship things to Namibia, other agricultural produce to Namibia. Once again, putting Namibia's particular policy in terms of whether or not they should go full on protective or try to deploy the same particular, you know, mechanisms in terms of temporary protective measures of their local agricultural produce or producers, in the sense of doing what they've done to South Africa. Now we have to do the similar thing to other large agricultural producers like Nigeria, like Egypt, like Ethiopia, like Kenya, like Tanzania. Even DRC is one of them as well. So that same discussion in terms of facing towards South Africa, you can pivot the same thinking literally to the rest of Africa in that scenario, because it does expose us. It's a question that continuously still pops up every time when I think about AFC-FTA. Who's going to see a greater benefit? Will Namibia see greater benefit, or will other African countries see greater benefit in Namibia? And that literally is a measurement that can't instantaneously take off, because you have to talk about the strength. Namibia is a strong currency. Namibia has good legal frameworks that protect its business environment, even though we internally have, we do have loopholes and gaps that obviously I still need to understand whether or not the Business Rescue Task Force from during COVID, which President Geingob had established, in terms of our understanding, you know, how best can you implement a strategy that can help look after the small private sector operators in the Namibian economy through, you know, trying to tweak legislation, tweak laws and tweak acts in terms of that. They are not so strict, not so rigid, not so inhibitive, or, you know, in terms of that they inhibit a lot of particular business perception and trust and the ability to be able to do business, but rather to be sort of like an elevating platform to say, hey, listen, if you further in this enterprise or in this particular avenue, you can go and register bankruptcy and then be allowed to once again to restart, because not everyone is made for the public service or to become an employee in the public service. I'm saying that without including my aspect of sarcasm, France, because primarily this is the particular thinking in Namibia that unfortunately the state is the largest employer. However, now in NDP6 and many other particular policy documents, the individual Namibian has been called upon, if you are not someone that has gainful employment or decent paying, a decent employment opportunity right now, you have to try and make some sort of a particular development that leads to a positive in whichever particular economic avenue. So that specifically speaks to a scenario of the everyday Namibians now have to start up and roll up their sleeves to achieve a particular economic goal in their own right. And once again, the emphasis for women and youth popped up in terms of the minister's particular appeal. This obviously means that as we all know, that there's more women than men in Namibia, and there's also a lot more youth in Namibia, specifically in the country, versus peoples above the age of 36 and going upwards. That obviously means that we're sitting with that population bulge of 72% below 34 or below 35 or 35 and down. So yes, there's also that particular scenario in terms of looking at the potential future pressures that Namibia has to try and navigate, has to try and avoid, and thus also has to put strategies in places and other particular mechanisms in place in order to weather future economic storms that might pop up.
Right. And yeah, because I was also looking at the same thing of when it comes to there is a clause in SACU which kind of prevents Namibia, Botswana, Lesotho, and Eswatini from getting in any, you know, economic agreement with, you know, countries kind of like, you know, outside SACU. I'm not sure how deep is that restriction. Will it not limit Namibia to fully participate in the, you know, the Africa Continental Free Trade Area?
It currently does, France. You have to look at also in terms of the reason for BRICS's existence. And many Africans think that BRICS will be this kind of a, in its own right, its own particular liberating multilateral platform. Actually, BRICS does also already sound off a lot of restrictions or restrictive tendencies. It's a good thing you brought up that SACU thing in France, because SACU is the world's oldest custom union. There's nothing on the planet that can compete with SACU's particular existence. And remember, when SACU was established, these were all former British territories or British customs, customs territories where the British collected and extracted from Southern Africa. So we're talking about Namibia obviously coming in 1918 and 1919. Botswana was already a protectorate of the British. Eswatini and Lesotho were also protectorates of the British. If you look at Eswatini and Lesotho's particular existence, France, they're similar to like Botswana's old name, which was known as Bechuana Land. And primarily the British, you know, they signed a treaty with the British by saying that the British can extend particular military protection over them, in some, as long as they are obviously friendly enough towards British, British foreign policy in the Southern African region. Now, when you look at that scenario, that's literally just what South Africa inherited when they were classified as the Union of South Africa in 1921. It was not a full-on independence, because at that stage they didn't have a prime minister. They had a prime minister, not a president. they obviously only became a full-on, sort of like a breakaway republic, here from the 60s onwards, 60s and 70s onwards, obviously, as you greatly well know, in terms of the Great Segregation Plan that obviously rolled out, which later on became the Group Areas Act, and which was then later on colloquially used as apartheid. So, historically, if we take that context in line, France, this is literally an economic neighborhood that South Africa cultivated for itself. Yes, it does put a restriction on us as Namibia. It's the reason why Namibia and Lesotho earlier this year, when I attended the automotive industry value chain development strategy, where thinkers in Namibia and in, let me rather say stakeholders in Namibia and Lesotho through the UN Economic Africa Council or Africa Economic Council, it's known as UNECA, or organization, we're exploring how Namibia and Lesotho can both leverage the promises and the potential that having an automotive industry value chain implementation in each of the economies can actually lead to the highest skilled Namibians and Lesotho citizens and residents that both countries want to achieve. Because through manufacturing, France is the only way that you can technically modernize your economy, that you can technically diversify your economy, and that you can technically also achieve other particular manufacturing levels in your economy. Now, at the heart of literally what you also cited there, Franz, is there's also SADC. SACU is a neighborhood in SADC, and SADC wishes to achieve economic integration in its own right, which technically also cascades into a scenario which into an existing economic integration between Namibia, South Africa, and Botswana in that scenario. It's just that Namibia and South Africa are linked or pegged, their currencies are pegged to each other, or Namibia is pegged to South Africa, and Botswana is obviously going it alone. However, there are particular worrisome scenarios in terms of economic diversity or economic diversification, which Botswana is now trying to implement, which Namibia is also now trying to implement, which are of great concern, because economic diversification speaks towards you need massive amounts of money, meaning investments, to come about. Now, you can have investments in infrastructure and equipment, and you can have capital investments, which are the flowing in of money. And Namibia is unfortunately in the negative front, because I call this Namibia's own particular Dutch disease or Dutch curse, because we're already experienced a Dutch curse or Dutch disease, in that it's only the mining sector that has been experiencing the biggest growth, because of they've had the most exploration and the most foreign investment flowing into the country. Anything else has been subpar. The only other sector that's literally carrying Namibia at the bootstraps is the retail sectors, and that is born from the existence of other particular requirements that need to be present in your economy, meaning that you need to have a large enough consumer base, meaning people with salaries and disposable income, and that you need certain particular infrastructure requirements that should have been met, like, you know, good standard of roads in terms of transport, good storage in terms of where you can still store things in urban settlements, and as well as also good distribution points like malls and pretty large, you know, retailers that can actually meet the particular demands met in Namibia. From that, most of those retailers, most of those malls carry products coming out of South Africa, which already should tell you that South Africa's economic diversification is already 10, 20, probably 50 years ahead of ours. You find the same template existing in Brazil. Now, remember, just to sensitize you back to the BRICS discussion, where I said the BRICS scenario probably looks like, in its own right, also just a continuation of, you know, a negative thing that is already in existence, meaning South Africa being the most advanced economy on Africa. No matter what people can come and tell you about the investments that the likes of Ali Dangote from Nigeria wish to make, if you have to look on a list of how many billionaires South Africa has produced, how many millionaires South Africa has, you see the level of economic advancement, economic prowess, economic development that South Africa can actually do. South Africa can actually have a large multinational company actually withdraw out of its economy, and another one can take its place. In Namibia, this is not the potential. In Botswana, it's not the potential. Even if you go to the Mercosur bloc that Brazil is in charge of, Mercosur wishes to access into Namibia. Do you remember the chickens that came from Brazil that came to Namibia but through South Africa into our shops? Do you remember that story?
Yes.
Where many Namibians were wondering, you know, are these chickens not GMO, you know, GMO treated and stuff like that? Well, here's the thing, Franz. You're talking about one industrial power like Brazil talking to another industrial power like South Africa. You can't have a industrial power come and talk to Namibia and tell Namibia, hey, they will obviously bully Namibia in the negotiation by telling, hey, listen, we see that you can't produce your own chickens, or you're not on the scale that we can produce, which is also a bit of a worrisome thing because they can also flood your market. And that brings you back to the comment that Minister Zamwani said in terms of, you know, finding the common ground, continuously working towards improving relations between Namibia and South Africa because of South Africa's new agriculture minister. Well, he's technically just from a different party, is, you know, in terms of his understanding and what the common pathway is that they've got to look at. Because Steyn isn't back in 2024. He literally went on record. And I know Matthias and I, we explored those conversations. And even on the home run, Steyn Eisen was on record by saying, hey, listen, this is not a good thing that Namibia was doing. Schlettwein had to tell him also, and, you know, just tell him, hey, listen, this was your predecessors before you were understanding of this particular dimension. We're sorry for not telling you, but we've got to tell you now again. We also have producers, and we technically they are infant producers. They must be protected. Still, the South African agriculture sector from the crop cultivation sector, they still dominate our economy. This primarily just means we literally have to achieve the goal set out in NDP6 if we wish to change that particular picture.
Right. You remind me of what happened between Ukraine, Hungary, Slovakia and Poland when the Slovak and Hungarian and Polish, you know, government decided to, you know, to close their borders for Ukrainian grains because they wanted to protect their local grain producers, and it already, you know, sparked outrageous response from the Ukrainian side.
Exactly, Franz, because primarily in that scenario, it was an EU directive that the EU wished to push, but they were telling Poland, Slovakia, and Hungary, you know, it should come through your borders or through your particular countries, and those three countries just went straight up and went and said, hey, listen, no, we can't do that because we've got to protect our own producers. We've got to look after our own particular sectors. And if you look at Western Europe, which is on the other side of those three countries that you mentioned, they were already stating and citing, you know what, their local producers already achieve advanced preference in their local economies. Whereas in Poland, Slovakia, and in Hungary, it is still a developmental issue for them. And many Namibians might not know that, yes, even in Europe, you do get countries that technically have a developmental, if you can call it like a, you know, a portfolio to them or profile. You find most of these particular satellite countries that were bordering onto the USSR. Unfortunately, they also have a great particular developmental, pathway, just like Namibia, just like Botswana to travel.
Right, Dwight, thank you very much for that insightful, commentary that you have given us and to the listener as well.
Not a problem, Franz. Thank you.
Right. All right, that has been Dwight Links giving us in-depth analysis of what was, you know, taking place from the Namibia Agronomic Board annual presentation. And we understand that, fuel prices will remain the same. I'm not going to go deeper into this document because of its format that is not readable with my systems here. But the good news is that fuel prices are going to remain the same this month of October. But we're going to look for an economist to try to make us understand in depth of what that this means, you know, because Namibia is already going through, you know, stressful situation as far as fuel prices concerned. Right, we are joined together with by Abednego Ekanjo, who is an economist. Just want to understand from his perspective, from his economic knowledge, the announcement of, you know, no increase as far as fuel is concerned, what it means. Good afternoon, Mr. Abednego.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, just take us in. What is the meaning of no increase?
Yeah, so the ministry conducted its calculations as usual, and the outcomes of those calculations indicated some moderate under-recoveries on the prices of petrol as well as diesel. So after reviewing those calculations, the ministry then took a decision to keep the prices for the month of October unchanged. So what this means is exactly that there will be no adjustment in either the prices of petrol and diesel. So the prices of those petroleum products will remain at their current levels moving into the month of October. And this is basically due to the stability which is in the international oil market at the current moment, as well as the strengthening of the Namibian dollar, or the Namibia dollar against the United States dollar. Although we have seen some slight increases in barrel prices, those were outweighed by the appreciation of the NAM dollar against the US dollar. So all in all, the market, the international oil market is currently stable. We do not see, or we are not experiencing any major geopolitical events, as well as supply and demand is somewhat stable. So this, when it comes then to a price taker like Namibia, it then means that stability in the international oil market is also transferred to us as price takers as Namibia. That's why we are seeing prices remaining unchanged throughout the month of October.
All right. Just lastly, what made the Namibian dollar appreciate? What were the factors that led to the appreciation of the Namibian dollar?
Yeah, obviously, there are many determinants that influence the strengthening of one currency against another currency. But usually, it revolves around the demand of a certain currency. So, for example, when there is more demand for the US dollar in the international currency market, that's when you see other currencies losing value against that particular currency, which is more demanded because there is more demand for that currency. But obviously, there are a lot of determinants, economic fundamentals. For example, if your country has certain resources that the rest of the world is demanding, that can play a role in determining the value of your currency. So the determinants are a lot as far as currencies are concerned.
Right, Mr. Abednego. So in other words, the government is saying you should not be worried. You should just maybe be afraid of November or December because it's unknown whether prices will change.
Yeah, so for the month of October, there will be no changes in prices. However, as far as November and December are concerned, those reviews will be conducted at the appropriate time when we approach. At the end of October, we'll obviously conduct the review for November. And then at the end of November, we'll conduct the review for December. So it's an unpredictable market, but I think the assurance that Namibians can have is that we have the National Energy Fund, which this time around, and even the previous months, that there were no adjustments in their under-recoveries, the NEF has been absorbing those under-recoveries on behalf of consumers. And it will continue to absorb those under-recoveries this time around. So hopefully moving into November and December, the NEF will also be able to play a stabilizing role.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Abednego Ikanjo. We're wishing you a great weekend ahead.
Likewise, thank you so much.
All right, that was Abednego Ikanjo, an economist, and the time is 4 minutes after the hour of six. Hey, you know I'm going ahead. It's weekend. Don't blame me. It's weekend. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock. You see, so when we continue, yeah. So tying in what going back to our first discussion, we are looking at Africa. You know, we are looking at the AI case in Africa, and one of the issue we are talking about under this is agriculture, and it is said here that agriculture is, you know, is central to Africa's economic and employment and employing to Africa's economy, employing over 60% of the workforce. In all 55 countries. However, the continent's food import costs $35 billion US dollars annually. Then, artificial intelligence technologies are transforming the farming practices to address food insecurity and sustainability challenges through a surge in agri-tech startup focused on finding solutions to monitoring crops' health, and of course providing real-time weather and market information. The study encompassing Kenya, you know, South Africa and Nigeria found that nearly half of new artificial intelligence innovations were focused on agriculture, which means agriculture is a big issue in Africa. So, and with what we are saying about, you know, protecting local farmers, it seems that Namibia doesn't yet have a strong, you know, measure. It doesn't have really a strong measure standpoint to, you know, protect local farmers. We might see Namibia compromising and, you know, to the detriment of local farming. And to, of course, to the benefit of South Africa because of those economic, you know, consequences that entails making drastic and, you know, abrupt decisions. So, but agriculture in Africa is very key and employs almost 60% of the workforce. That is both, you know, a commercial and, you know, subsistence. Subsistent agriculture. So artificial intelligence plays a role in making sure that tools are created that are there to facilitate, you know, smooth agricultural transformation in agricultural tech, you know, transformation. Now we look at the education side of things, and it is said that education is a cornerstone for Africa's development, with its youth population set to become the largest in the world by 2050. However, challenges persist, including limited access to quality teaching resources, and barriers to access. Artificial intelligence technologies can help address these issues through personalized learning tools and, you know, multilingual platforms that bridge language gaps. The African Union's The African Union education strategy is implementation plans of 2023 to 2028 provides a robust framework to accelerate the adoption of digital technologies. Through this strategy, you know, aligns with the Continental Education Strategy of Africa, that is the CESA, which focuses on the solutions to enhance access to equity and quality education, or equity and quality in education systems across the continent. This is a report of 2025. So Pharmaline uses, you know, the DALIN artificial intelligence, which supports small, you know, small farmers worldwide. Launched in March 2024, DALIN AI has been recognized on one of the Time magazine, you know, to be the best invention of 2024, with accessible through, you know, WhatsApp chatbots and conversational interactive voice. Interactive voice response. The system, this DALIN AI allows farmers to interact in over 27 languages, including Twi, Swahili, and Yoruba, this multilingual platform enables farmers in countries like Kenya, Ghana, and others across Africa and Asia, and of course South America, to receive real-time advice on various agricultural topics, such as fertilizers, fertilizer usage, crop rotation, market logistics, and disease diagnosis through photo submissions. As of October 2024, it has been used by approximately 1.1 million farmers. So those are the reports, and of course, if I have to add my 2 cents to this report, I would say that the involvement of Africa in artificial intelligence driven solutions brings Africa to play pivotal, you know, role in innovation, especially because this is where we lack. And now we are talking about the the rising academies and established in 2014 and has since expanded its reach to over, 300,000 students in countries, including Sierra Leone. Okay. Pardon me. I don't know how to pronounce this. Including Sierra Leone, Liberia, Ghana, and of course, Rwanda. It operates affordable and private. Excuse me. So one of the companies uses technologies through, to make sure that students have AI-powered, math tutors designed to build foundational math skills among low literacy and low income students in Africa. Accessible via WhatsApp. And of course, Rory utilizes the NPL. This is a machine learning algorithm and machine learning to provide personalized tutoring and now we are talking about the very important we come to the very important aspect in artificial intelligence usage in Africa, which is the most advanced sector, and this is the finance and banking. This is where it becomes more exciting. Financial services sectors has seen the greatest impact of artificial intelligence backed tools. Artificial intelligence driven, models assesses the credit. These are the tools that are used in the banking sector depending on which country you are, and some countries like Kenya have even gone further by developing, they are saying they develop, credit worthiness, for those without traditional credit histories by evaluating the alternative data services. This promotes financial inclusion and it promotes financial inclusion. And Kenya-based Tala, this is Tala analyzes mobile phone usage and payment behavior, which then helps make it easier for customers to be, to be approved for micro loans. The Jumo, which is Jumo, Jumo banking as a services or as a service platform, operates out of Ghana, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Zambia, These are the countries that are using you know, this type of, you know, technological, you know, oh, so it is Kenya, pardon me, this type of services operates out of, you know, Ghana, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, Zambia, Côte d'Ivoire, that is of course Ivory Coast, and South Africa. It uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to create a tailored financial products for underbanked. This is more for the underbanked. Artificial intelligence powered chatbots and virtual assistants offered faster around the clock support, improving user experience and reducing operational costs. So in Africa we have the most, in fact I was listening to one of the conversation, and the European, you know, people, financial experts and economists were even saying that Africa, to a certain extent, has the most advanced, has the most advanced, you know, banking sector, with the most user-friendly, you know, banking apps. Now, the Kodai, based out of Nigeria, started as an artificial intelligence, or started a platforms helping users with payments and transfers. The goal was to offer conversational artificial intelligence to ease the unbanked into the mainstream. The South African ABSA, ABSA group has introduced the virtual assistant, you know, ABSA, that is the ABY, which uses machine learning to handle, or NLP to handle customer queries and guide users through, you know, basic banking tasks. The Internet of Things, IoT, is also making significant strides in Africa, or in Africa's, you know, financial sector. For example, Kopa, a Kenyan digital financial services, company, has successfully integrated advanced Internet of Things technologies into its digital micropayments platforms. This enables the processing of up to 500 payments per minute, supporting over 3 million customers across Africa. So this is the most exciting, you know, and the most exciting a sector in Africa, which is the banking sector. It has seen much growth and advancement, and not only growth, but it also has seen innovative, you know, growth. When we're talking about growth, we talk about innovative growth. So it has seen, you know, in terms of capacity and using artificial intelligence, we can just use it, we can just use ourselves as an example in Namibia, which every bank right now in Namibia has a kind of, you know, has an app. And these apps are very user friendly in terms of their interface. In fact, you don't need to be in a queue to access financial, to access your finances. You just need to be where internet is. The challenges though, we have connectivity issues in some parts of Africa, or let's say some parts of Namibia, where you can't do transaction. You need to travel some few kilometers to access the nearest, you know, internet, you know, connected point. But that is just a minor setback, because Namibia is one of the countries that are, you know, very fast, I mean, leading in rolling out internet and, you know, network, you know, connectivity. So Namibia has the one of the highest, you know, percentage in terms of connectivity in Africa. And we have one of the best banking, you know, sector, one of the most advanced. In fact, the banking sector is the most advanced in Namibia. I don't think there is any other sector that is more advanced, leading in terms of innovation, because when it comes to the improvement of banking apps, you know, almost every now and then you see new improvements and as far as, you know, security is concerned. So to the non-banked, it's very important to also, you know, that's where now education comes in, and also to be, you know, computer literate. Because when you're talking about computer literacy, we are not just talking about, you know, PCs. We're talking about also mobile phone, you know, so that you are able to know how to use your mobile phone very well. And you'll be able to access financial, you know, to access your finance very, very effectively and efficiently. So the services are there, but it will take, you know, personalized learning and adaptive learning softwares that provide, you know, customized educational experiences tailored to individual students' need. But at the same time, some of us that are no longer in school, we will also need what we call, you know, the open lifelong learning, where you are learning at home, you know, wherever you are in your own comfort, you learn how to use these tools, because otherwise there will be barriers that will be there for you, and you'll not be able to, you know, to access even your funds. You know, you always need somebody to help you, and then be at the mercy of what others are able to do, you know, in terms of robbing you. One of the issues, and we talk about one of the issue is, one of the issue, Africa is busy creating macrofinance, you know, AI powered lending, you know, models, and using alternative data to assess the smart use of access of tools, in fact, that provides access to, quick, you know, finance assistance or quick financial services. And then, you know, create credit worthiness. So we can have all these, you know, smart contacts and artificial intelligence that provide automated, you know, fraud detection in you know, digital finance. But if we are not, you know, if we are not knowledgeable on how to use these tools, there will still be more barriers, and we are going to be the barriers ourselves. So an adaptive digital ID, real-time, you know, biometric verification systems, and then support so they are developing automated fraud detections, and of course these are the automatic fraud detections in digital finance, and these are adaptive digital IDs that are in real time, and of course supported by biometric verification system. But still, these are very seamless, very fast. For example, if somebody's trying to log into your account, and the bot software or the algorithm will detect that this person logging in is using a different device from the device that, you know, logs in. And a message will be sent immediately on your phone to verify as to whether you are the one that is logging in or somebody else. So in the moment you verify, you'll be through. But the moment you said, no, I'm not the one, somebody else is trying to log in, then that person will be blocked, you know, from accessing your account. But this also come at the only cost here is that we need to know. You know, we need to know, and this is where, you know, the open lifelong learning comes through, because some people are very adult and this technology is new, it's only understood by young people. But if you are eager enough to learn, you'll be able to make your own transactions. And you'll be able to make your own transfers, and you know, do transactions, right? And our time, in fact, has come to an end, and I didn't see the time. We are now crossing over to the north with my colleague Loise, that is going to take us through on Kundana Dhingi. And stay tuned for on Kundana Dhingi. And of course, I want to wish you the best weekend. I want to wish you the best, you know, weekend. Don't forget, don't drink and drive. And don't forget to buckle up. Those are safety measures. From me, it is now a goodbye, and see you on Realm of the Historics tomorrow. Realm of the Historics tomorrow is starting at 7 o'clock. So please set your alarm, because you can't afford to miss what we are going to discuss tomorrow. It's a goodbye from me, and let me wait for my colleague to take over. It seems that Loise is my colleague Matthias will be the one taking over. It is not Loise that is coming in. It's Matthias that is, of course, coming in. All right, Matthias is walking in, and let me just greet him before I say my goodbyes. Yes, Matthias, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon to you, Dr. Franz.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we find ourselves in a, on an unusual, on unusual talk, unusual hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can
but,
see.
Yeah. But okay. It's all yours. Have wishing you the best on the show.
All right.